Hey friends, thanks for tuning in to the Church Planner Podcast. Before we started today, wanted to tell you about a really special opportunity our friends at the Micro Church Conference put on by Brave Future, happening April 18th through the 20th in Kansas City. This is for all of you who are wondering what is a new kind of paradigm for missional church planting and church multiplication through smaller expressions of church, what they call rediscovering the smaller way. It's happening April 18th through the 20th. Kansas City is being hosted by Kansas City Underground. It's going to be a great weekend. And they've given us four free registrations to give away. Normally the price is $90, but we will get you into the conference for free. We have four of those. What you can do to enter is go on our Instagram at Church Planter Podcast. And there you'll find a DM button. Click that DM button. Send us a DM with your email on it and your name and where you serve. So email, name, where you serve, and you'll be entered to win one of four Micro Church Conference registrations. You just get yourself to Kansas City and you can be there and learn a ton from our friends at Brave Futures. Hope you enjoy the show today.
I'll start. My name is Rod. And I like to party.
So you mean whiskey?
What?
You're saying it weird.
Saying what weird?
All of it.
Where do you get off?
Hey there, Church Planner. Welcome back to the Church Planner Podcast. This is your host, Bobby Frazier, and my dear friend and co-host, Matt Turcato. Welcome back, Matt. Week two.
Week two. It was good enough that I decided to come back and do another one, so...
Yeah,
that's saying quite a bit.
Early results are in, and people don't have an opinion about you yet. So
still too close to call.
Yeah, so let us know. Do you like Matt? Like, just give us a thumbs up or a thumbs down on social media. Just
that's
jump
a
on.
Great way to help me grow spiritually and as a podcast co-host.
This will help Matt work through his people pleasing issues that he is working through. So please jump on, let us know. But seriously, we love to hear from you at Church Planner Podcast on Instagram and connect with you on there. We love doing this mostly because it serves you, partly because it gets us some time to hang out and just talk smack about nonsense. And so if you're new around here, what's going to happen over the next 20 minutes is Matt and I are going to talk about random things happening in our lives, including but not limited to a combination of pop culture, sports, and funny things we see online. Probably would be 90% of it, I think.
I can fill an hour with that, Robert.
Oh, we could do smack talk all day. There's no question. But in about 15 minutes, we're gonna get down to business. So if you want to just scrub forward to that spot, you can. Today we're gonna be talking about a really cool topic. And you probably saw it in the show notes, but we're going to be talking about real estate and church planting and how do you find places to be together. And that's a huge problem for a lot of us as we're trying to figure out what God's doing in our community and where we're going to do what we do. So stay tuned for that. But first today, Matt, what is going on in your life? What do you want to talk about today? Have you been thinking about?
I mean, if you ask me what's going on in my life, there's one thing that comes to my mind right now. I shared this with you last week. We got a puppy this weekend.
You actually, it came to your house this weekend?
We went and got the puppy on Friday. And
man.
So this weekend, I have been in 8-week-old Golden Doodle Training Central, which included the first night getting about 4 hours of sleep and playing with this puppy from 4 a.m. until my kids woke up at 7.
So your dog is crate training you pretty well? Is that what you're saying?
Well, the first time I didn't put her in the crate at all, actually. We're trying this new model now. The second night, it was great. She slept in the crate and I would get up. I got up about 5 times for 10 minutes just to let her out. And then last night, she got up 1 time at 2 a.m. I let her out for 5 minutes, came back in, she went back to sleep, and I slept through the night. So I feel like I'm pretty good at that. But my kids are in heaven. We are cleaning up little pee piles like crazy, and we're just loving this little dog. So
I can't believe I haven't met this little puppy. I'm dying, man.
Come on over.
I'm not going to let my wife or my kids come, but I'm going to go. I don't want them to want a puppy, but I like playing with other people's puppies. So we'll come over. So tell us all about, tell us about the puppy. What's the name?
Yeah.
So she is a little golden doodle. She's 8 weeks old. Her name is Luna. We got a hypoallergenic puppy because my wife is allergic to dogs. She got me a dog. I share this story a lot, but she got me a puppy for Valentine's Day about 10 years ago.
Oh, and then, so sweet. Yeah, until you hear the rest of the story.
What a kind thing to do for a person is get them a dog. And so her name was Addie, and when my wife had our first, our little girl, Lily, her hormones changed and her allergies picked up a ton. So she was really allergic to Addie. And so when we moved back from Portland to Boise, we remodeled the inside of our house. And my wife said, I think it might be time to think about getting rid of Addie. And I said, there's never a time to get rid of your dog. But the good news is we gave Addie to my sister-in-law and her husband. So we still get to see her and house sit. But I didn't think Keddy would ever want to get a dog again. But one of her habits really came through. She loves to research. She is she reads all these research papers and she's all about it. And she came across some studies that said the benefits of having pets for animals and specifically dogs and what that can do for your kids' emotional health and for their ability to adjust. And so she was like, I think we should get a dog. And I was like, done. So our process for looking for the dog was basically her sending me pictures of a bunch of puppies and every single time me saying, yes, I want that one. I want that one.
Until she chose someone, she just kept going.
she picked one, and so we went and picked this little puppy up. So she's adorable, and we're super excited. My kids are just in heaven, but I feel like we're definitely in that new puppy kind of honeymoon period, and it's going well. So that's all that's consuming the world of the Turcados this weekend. So.
Oh man. Well, so obviously you don't want more kids, but you do want a puppy, and a puppy is a lot of work at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Is there any regret on the lack of sleep or the number of pee spots you have to clean up? Cause there's a lot of diapers when you have a baby, but there's not a lot of pee on the floor for a while, at least.
I would take cleaning up pee off of hardwood floor over changing diapers every single day of the week.
Not newborn diapers. Newborn diapers are like nothing. Like there's nothing in those things. They're easy. There's like 12 a day, but they're like really easy.
Yeah, but my guess is within 2 months, Luna's going to be going potty outside every time. Now, there is the long term, you have to clean up poop outside all the time for the rest of her life.
But you do have two kids.
I do.
And of course, you made them sign an agreement
we had before you started. Conversation. Just so you guys know, this is actually dog sit our previous dog Addie quite a bit when my sister goes out of town, and so Addie came over and we knew we were gonna get a dog, and so my son Makai was like, hey, I want you to go out and clean up all Addie's poop, and he was like, yeah, that sounds great, let's do this. And I was like, how do I harness this forever? Because I know in like 2 years you're gonna be like, no, I'm done with this. So, I wouldn't trade it. I don't require a ton of sleep, and so like even this weekend wasn't that bad. And the little puppy kisses and puppy breath, and she's adorable and she's so soft. It's 100% worth it. In a different way than kids are 100% worth it.
Yeah, sure.
I don't want any more kids, but I was all about getting a puppy.
You know, we're at risk of having a smack talk without any sports talk, which I think is like probably a good because we almost like me and Tim almost always had some sports talk. But
I have one other thing that I wanted to bring up to you, as you said, what's going on in the world.
All right.
I just finished a rewatch rather quickly. I've zoomed through it of a TV show that I believe you're a big fan of.
Is it The Bear?
It was not The Bear. It was a rewatch. Oh. So it's an older show.
The Wire? The Wire?
I've already referenced it once when I said that that the polling was too close to call.
Oh, you're watching West Wing.
I finished the West Wing. And it was so good. I was like, it turned out like Keddy doesn't watch a lot. My wife, Keddy, doesn't watch a lot of TV. There are a few shows that she enjoys. The West Wing is one that she would watch episodes off and on when I was watching it the first time through. And so we were just kind of in one of those nights where it was like, what do you want to do? It's like, let's just throw something on. And I was like, let's watch a West Wing. And we just like chose an episode and picked it. And then that put me on the process of binging a show within like 3 weeks. So
oh, it's such a bingeable show, man. And here's the thing, when that show came out, obviously it was written by Aaron Sorkin actually as a follow-up to The American President, which was a film that he wrote. Which was actually a follow-up to a play that he had written. So it's like the whole thing for Aaron Sorkin. But that show, when it came out, it was seen as like this serious drama. It was seen as like this like nighttime serious drama on NBC back in the late 90s. I think today you couldn't sell that as a fantasy.
No, like I laugh more than anything that show.
Oh,
hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, amazing writing. And it's also this like, I think where you're going, it's like this weird ideal, like this, like, I just see like two political parties working against each other, but somewhat together. And I'm like, oh, that'd be nice.
Well, yeah. You think back to the era of, you know, kind of like the moderate Democrats of the second half of the 90s.
Yeah.
And then the neocons, which were moderate Republicans in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And of course there was contention and there was, you know, crap that happened and, you know, like Dick Cheney's probably going to burn in hell for what he did. But
you mean shooting somebody in the face with a gun?
No, that was actually like, God doesn't care about that as much as him lying about weapons of mass destruction and gives into a war in Iraq.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's probably a bigger deal. But you look back on those days and they seem so contentious, and looking back, they feel like a dreamland of bipartisanship.
I know. I told Kenny the other day, I was like, you know, I could do for a third George W. Bush term right about now. Right. Just felt like America was a simpler time with a simpler man.
The guy's in his 80s and you'd like, actually, I'd prefer, you know, he's a lot like Biden. He's just kind of clueless.
I was going to say, could you imagine a president in his 80s? Oh, wait.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I can. We're going to have at least one.
Anyway, but The West Wing was a great rewatch.
You rewatched the whole thing in like a couple weeks?
No, I just watched from where we'd started. I think we'd started in like the middle of season like 4.
Okay.
Like we just picked an episode. There's an episode that I like commonly go back to as one of my favorite episodes. And so then we watched a couple episodes that night and I just kept watching from there. So I might do like the swing through and go back and start season 1. But
what about the last season, the election between Matt Alan Santos Alda and
Arnold Vinick. Jimmy Schmidt. Oh,
yep.
It's great. It's again, coming into a political season, it was like a nice primer of like this idea of like, oh, like these two kind of normal people who have, you know, beliefs that are probably a little counter to their own party, and they're both pretty
two
moderate.
Oh, it's yeah, a pro-life Democrat and a pro-choice Republican. That's who they have.
That's the
and
best you're like, of it. Yeah, absolutely. The Republican doesn't go to church, and
the Democrat's
and
like
the Democrat does, and he's. It's like this, this fantasy world that could never
as,
get. But
as if either party would allow that to happen now, it's not even in the realm of possibility. It was also pre-internet culture in a lot of ways because it was early 2000s, late 90s when there wasn't social media, which has just shifted. There was early blog culture, so you see
they talk
some
about
of that
the Drudge Report a lot, like this new news outlet that's kind of starting to pop up where it's like, oh, it's like everything you say is online now. It's like, oh, like everything we say is online, and it has been for the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah, it feels like it's been so long since that, like a world where secrets could be held, which is impossible now. Yeah. This weekend we had a great weekend. My wife and I, we went to the Family Life Weekend to Remember.
I was gonna ask, how'd it go?
It was fantastic. Cause we've had a really hard 6 months of stuff we've been working on in our marriage. You know, you know we talk about this stuff, but you know, you go through these seasons, we're hitting 20 years this summer, and there's still things we haven't worked through over 20 years. And the last 6 months have been a lot of work. We went to counseling. We've been on like a wait list for 4 months. We finally got into a counselor. And so going to this weekend to remember, we we were like, we'd already had a lot of conversations. We were already feeling close to each other because we had leaned in. And so it was just a beautiful weekend. It was so great. We stayed in Airbnb with the worst bed I've ever slept in. It was just like a quarter mile down the Greenbelt, like our little river walk here in Boise.
Down to the
walked down. We stopped at Push and Pour on the way each day.
Great.
And
it was place to stop.
Ah, it was so great. And if you've never been to a Family Life weekend to remember, and you've never even heard of it, maybe they have like a bunch of them every year, but they do a great job. And it made me remember, and also just feel a little sad because I miss Crew. We worked with Crew, the ministry, for about a decade, and Crew is the ministry that runs Family Life. And what they do is the whole weekend they see is evangelism. There's a bunch of people there who either haven't committed to Christ or like are in a marriage with someone who has, and it's kind of they're trying to figure out marriage, and it is an entree into them growing spiritually. And Crew leverages it in a way that's really relational and simple and built around people's stories that made it feel like the whole weekend was like this apologetic for marriage is a picture of God, and it's also a gift for you. And so they don't treat it like, oh gosh, you're going to have to figure out this marriage thing or you're going to be miserable. It's like they treat marriage as a gift. They treat family as this way God provides for you. And then they spend a lot of time helping you see how God is meeting you in the midst of your marriage and how the Holy Spirit is like this vital part. So I walked away really appreciative of Family Life and what they do. And also, what I was thinking about coming out of it is we've been toying with the idea of doing an alpha course as like a way to launch like a new micro church. And we love alpha. It's a great way to kind of like have conversations with people who are on their faith journey. But alpha has a marriage course that's like an evangelistic like marriage course. And I was thinking, I think if I told my neighbors I was going to have just like a marriage group that met and talked through marriage stuff, and I think all of my non-believing neighbors would say, I really need help with my marriage. Like literally two of my neighbors went through a divorce this year, and they don't have any resource to like figure out what to do to walk through hard seasons of marriage. This is like one area where the church actually has some ability to be good news to the world around us. And I don't know. I've just been thinking a lot about it. Like this could be a good thing, man.
Yeah.
You've been to a Family Life conference before, right?
Yeah. We, actually right after me and Katie got married, the first thing we did was, this wasn't a Family Life one, but we got plugged into a young married couple Bible study. And it was just like 10 couples that or like five couples, 10 people who were all brand new to marriage, and one older Tabby Grad's parents, Adam and they led it. But it was, so they had like seasons of marriage under there, and then they just kind of walked us through, and we were going through like love and respect, it was great. But then we can remember we went through was in Portland. It was actually in a season where me and Ketty were I had moved to Portland. And she hadn't yet moved to Portland. She was like still here because she had some work stuff, and we were really kind of testing the waters with Portland. So we were living apart for a period of time, and then she came up for the weekend, and it was great. We were still, I think, pretty immature in our marriage, and so there was some good conflict that happened, and it was like one of those things where it's like digging up the soil. But then she went home and was like, oh, we don't get to kind of do anything with this. So we were looking at going to the one this weekend that you guys went to. But I think we're going to try and do, there's one in Sun River coming up that we're going to try and make it to.
Nice.
It feels like getting away to a place, and Sun River is a great place to get away to. It would also be nice. So.
Oh, man, I love Sun River. It is so great. There's a family in our church who has a cabin out there, and it's such a great place to go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, today's topic... real estate and church planting. Now we're not talking about finding your personal home. We're not talking about that. We're talking about actual, how do we find space for our churches to meet in? And I got to be honest, this is an area, I meet with church planters all the time. This is one of the things that they're always needing to talk about, especially early on in the journey. And probably through the first 7 years, almost every church planter's consistently trying to figure out where they're going to meet. Every time they grow, every time they shrink, we spent 5 years in a gym meeting at the same time as another church on the other side of the building, of an old evangelical friend's church. And that worked well for us. And then they decided they wanted to raise the price by 400% or whatever 18 months ago. And we had to rethink that, obviously. But what I tell church planners when I meet with them is that real estate is a spiritual battle, because we're talking about the literal, this is the kingdom of this world, and it is held. The land itself is held by the Prince of Darkness, who has dominion over this world. And he doesn't want to give up space in this world for kingdom purposes. You have to wrestle it from this world to create space. And so it's a pretty complex thing. And what we found in our city is that in a growing city, primarily, in a fast growing city, the number of spaces that you can find that are available to meet are very low, very expensive. So Matt, you've been a part of lots of churches and church plants. What's the most creative space that you've ever seen a church plant in? And what's one that you wouldn't go back to because of it?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. One of the things that, as you were kind of talking through that, you said we have to wrestle the space away from the enemy. And then I immediately, the thought was like, and it's not over then. He's going to continue to want to wrestle it back. Like that feels like the story kind of from our experience was this, like, hey, like we were in this space that it wasn't beautiful. It wasn't bougie. We tried to make it as warm and welcoming as possible. But there were literal barriers sometimes to that feeling. It's like you're walking to a gym with the acoustics and you have a drum set and you're like, how do we make this work? But then, you know, 5 years later, it felt like there was this spiritual battle of like, oh, it's being taken from us and now we're displaced. And I loved, I was actually talking with one of the other families in our church the other day, and we were talking about the season between when we moved from Boise Friends to Discovery. We were actually like literally displaced for 3 months. We didn't have a building, so we're doing a lot online. It felt like COVID, but it wasn't COVID. But some of the best experiences we had, feeling kind of the body growing together, was like this, like outside of a physical church, in our homes because we had to be. And so I think that's what comes to mind when you ask, like, what's the weirdest place? It felt like the weirdest place I've ever done church was in my living room with five other families. And, you know, I think that a lot of people might feel that familiar to that because of COVID and, you know, being that being forced. But I think for us, at least at Redemption Hill, those have been some of the best seasons of our growth, is when we were forced to step outside of kind of the normal Sunday experience and enter into this really kind of like body-centered worshiping together in our homes has been really cool. And so that feels like a weird place that I didn't ever envision, you know, doing a home church, but like it was really cool. And then on the other side of things, like I think for a lot of people, if, you know, regardless if you're new to church planning or not, I would say I'm still new to it. I think it's not something you think about a lot. Like, you know, even when we were doing Redemption Hill, there was like, when you asked us to come plant, there was never this thought of like, where are we going to meet? I think that's probably a burden that's felt by one or
you
two
didn't
people.
Feel it.
Exactly. But there were just kind of this expectations like, well, if you want us to help you plant a church, then there's obviously going to be a place that we meet. And so I think that's something that's really interesting, is like, what does that look like to share that out? Because we did a ton of, you know, prep work, and we were meeting before, and we were doing like pre-launch stuff, and we had a lot of conversations about ideally what do we want as far as like some of our belief, you know, not our beliefs, but like the values that we have, and how are we going to do ministry, how are we going to do outreach, and at least for me, like as somebody who was involved, I didn't feel like I put any thought into like where are we actually going to meet and what is that going to, real estate wise, what does that look like? But I think that's something that like my guess is that church planters feel a heavy burden on. It's like, how do I come alongside somebody as part of the launch team to help alleviate some of that burden? But also, like, we had great conversations around physically, what do we want the space to be like? Like conceptually, what do we want? You know, I come from an Apple retail background, and you're like, I want you to bring Apple retail, like the vibe of an Apple retail store where you kind of, you feel comfortable and you feel welcome.
To an old gym.
That's right. To an old gym. And I think that, you know, that's something that, that like, that was the part, that was as far as I allowed myself to go into the real estate part of it. But I think a part of that is also like, how do you look for the spaces that God's calling you to with that? Because I think, you know, Boise Friends was not like, it's not the idea. And that's, again, it's a physical gymnasium with basketball hoops and a big scoreboard. It's like, that is not the place that I would have said, hey, let's meet here. This mm-hmm. is the warm, welcoming place mm-hmm. where we're going to be able to have people have an experience with God. So,
let's talk through, like, how do you make a decision like that? And I think that there's some, there's some places in this decision that are really problematic, and it has more to do with us as leaders than I think it actually has to do with our communities. The first is we want to find a place that's easy, that doesn't cost us a lot. Not in terms of money. I think money is like a secondary concern. I think it's more in terms of a labor concern. You and I both set up and tore down
every week,
a church every week for
52 weeks a year for 5 years.
5 years, with the exception of COVID, we got a little break there, but that was way harder.
It was a different type of emotional setup.
All that dumb video we had to do. So that's a big piece of it. People are saying, I want something that I can set up and leave, something I can use all week. I want something that will be the right size for our community. And I think that those are functional questions we have to ask. Those aren't just like nonsense questions.
Yeah.
But I think that anybody who's done mobile church will tell you that it's a really important part of the formation of the people. Because when you're doing setup and tear down is a key way that people engage and get to know one another early on. Everybody's needed when you're mobile. It's not like you could say, hey, it's fine. Me and my wife, we've got set up and tear down by ourselves every week. You don't need to show up. No, the answer is I was up all night with my kids. I had to prepare a sermon at 6 o'clock this morning. And then I've got to set up, we've got to do church, and then we have to tear down. And then that afternoon I'm gonna just be wiped. You know, like that's mm-hmm. That's a long day. And when you're setting up chairs for 50, 60, 70, 100 people, physically it's a lot. It's mm-hmm. a lot of work. And so when you're doing mobile church, there's something really powerful about everybody has to be a part of it. Yeah. You've got to throw in, the family all has to be in on it. And I think that we have friends who planted a church here in Boise, a very successful church plant. It's grown a ton. It's 10 years old and it's 5,000 people. And they met in a high school auditorium for the first 7 years of their church planning journey, which meant that every week they had 30 or 40 volunteers coming to do setup and tear down. And you're going to tell me that your church can't do it. Yeah. I'm sorry. Like, I actually think it's good for you, like as a church planter to do the physical work of setup. So I think the very first question you have to ask has nothing to do with real estate. It has to do with location.
Mm-hmm.
And location should be the key determiner for you. When you say, God, where are you calling me? You're asking where, and you're asking which people you're calling me to. And for us, as we were planting, Malia and I said, we wanted our lives to be integrated. We wanted to reach the people around us. We wanted to reach the people in our neighborhood. We wanted to be able to have people over before and after and share our lives together. And so when we bought our first house, when we moved back, that was kind of a decision that we were making about who we were going to reach and where we were going to be as a church plant. And what ended up happening was we kind of drew a radius and said, we're going to look in concentric circles outward from our house. And by God's grace, we were allowed to, you know, meet in this little gymnasium, and it was less than a half mile from our house, which is stunning. Because what that created was a ton of proximity with people in the neighborhood, so that when we had things that we did, it was like, well, we just meet down the road. And they say, oh, I've been past that place hundreds of times. They know it. It's a known location. So I think location in terms of proximity to you is actually more important than anything else. A lot of church planners are going to think visibility is really important, being on heavily trafficked roads. But the reality is most places aren't going to allow you to have permanent signage as a church planter. It's just unlikely that they're going to allow you to put a permanent sign or a sign that can be left out all week. And so location is actually, I would say today, less important in terms of actual visibility and your like being seen on the road with your signage. It's less important than ever because the way that people discover you is not through signage. Yeah. The way that people discover you is through Google My Business. And so thinking in terms of how could I find a spot that's easy to find, that's actually less of a problem than it's ever been. Yeah. I was looking back on some old materials that I found, and it was a church plant from the 70s, and they had to like draw out a little map of a neighborhood to like show you where it was, because it was like a house inside of a neighborhood, and they had to, you know, do the little streets. Now you just send them an address, or you send them to a website, and they just click on a link and they navigate to you. So that's less important. Now, what are some of the places that you want to think about when you're thinking about where to meet? Once again, I want to start with prayer and say, church planting real estate is really hard to find. And so you've got to literally battle in the spiritual realm and say, God, would you create space for us? Would you make room in the world for us to meet? And then start looking to see what could work for you. So a few ideas. Number one, schools. Now, this is a complex one because of the Establishment Clause and all of the constitutional rights around it. In our city, and I would say this is probably illegal in our city, but no one wants to fight the constitutional battle. But in our city, they will not rent schools to churches in the Boise School District. Now, they have a policy that will allow you to meet in a school, but only if you have already purchased a piece of land and have drawings that have been submitted to the city. So they will only allow you to meet in a church if you are literally ready to move into your new building, which is unlikely, honestly impossible, if you think about the likelihood that any church plant would have a piece of land that they've purchased and a set of plants. So church plants aren't available to schools, but most places they want them, especially places that need the money. And so we have a school district just 10 minutes away from here. They allow churches to meet in their schools because they need the revenue. It's a school district that has less commercial space within it, and they need revenue to pay for their mission. So they allow people to meet in those schools. I like middle schools and high schools because they have dedicated auditorium space. It's so much easier to set up in those places. And you also want to be looking for where can we do kid classroom, because kid classrooms are tough. Cafeterias work a lot. You can pipe and drape them off so that you kind of create some classroom style thing. I know a couple of churches locally who are meeting in schools and using hallways as classrooms, and then creating kind of ways to section off the space. It's complex, but you have organizations like Church in a Box, and there's a whole group of organizations and businesses that are there to kind of help you build out the equipment needs that you have for that mobile church. So take a look at some of those. Now, movie theaters are popular. Regal Cinemas actually has a business model that's built around renting to churches. So if you have a Regal Cinema.
I went to a church here in Boise in a movie theater very early on in my walk when I was in college. So it was felt nice, because then right afterwards I could just walk back out and walk back in.
Stick around for a matinee.
Catch the 1 o'clock show.
was that the Pursuit at the Reel?
Yeah, the Pursuit down at the Reel that was over the mall. It was great.
The mall Reel. Yeah. That worked great. And you could have, you know, a lot of larger movie theaters will have 200, 300 seats in it, so you can do a large service. Kids are difficult in movie theaters because the floors are dirty and they're not flat. All the seating is sloped downward. So finding a spot like that. There is actually an old theater for sale here in town, and I've tried to talk a couple of churches into purchasing it and rehabbing it. And it's a difficult work, but it can work especially short term, a couple of years, it could be a good starting point for a lot of churches. We've had a couple of successful ones that have happened in the last 5 years here in Boise that have launched in theaters. The third group is community centers, boys and girls clubs, anywhere where they have third spaces that are underutilized on Sunday mornings. There's one church that's renting an event center that's owned by a comedy troupe, and they don't use it on Sunday mornings, and they allow them to use their classrooms and their meeting space for a church. Now, of course, you and I, we're a part of like a micro church network. And so when we think about where churches can meet, it kind of expands even larger. Once you get down to 30 to 50, there's a lot of spaces you can meet in that would work pretty well. You can meet in gyms and CrossFit gyms. Like there's a lot of micro churches that kind of do that sort of ministry, and they meet in those spaces. A lot of houses work well. Now, we live in a northern climate, and that's different than like Peyton Jones on the Monday edition of Church Planner Podcast. He's planted churches outdoors in parks because he's in Orange County, California. And they have, you know, 50 weeks a year, they're going to have decent weather to be outside and be together. Yeah. Where here in Boise, Idaho, we probably have maybe 20 weekends, 25 yeah, weekends a year. Good. Yeah, you know, that feels about right.
25 if you don't mind being in the cold, a little wet.
Yeah. And, you know, when we, for us, between basically the end of June and the beginning of December, we could be outside 90% of the Sundays. Mm-hmm. They were pretty good. During COVID, we did some outdoor monthly gatherings that worked pretty well. Now, once you get past kind of the easy ones, the next step is to look and say, okay, where is there underutilized space? Strip malls can have pretty low retail usage, especially in kind of post-Amazon world we live in. And so if you can find underutilized storefront space, especially older 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s era strip malls that aren't large enough for kind of the big box stores and aren't hip enough or cool enough to have been gentrified yet, those can be really good spots to try out. But you have to be there late enough that they're cheap and early enough that they haven't been taken over by hipster coffee shops. You know, like that's the...
It being next to a hipster coffee shop can be a real draw.
But you got to get there before the hipster coffee that's shop, right? And get a long-term lease. Then it just like these
pushes the rent. I see.
Yeah. And in our neighborhood, we have like a really terrible strip mall. Actually, I'm developing a housing deal on it. And then there's our preschool meets down the road, and two doors down from our preschool, there's a really hip coffee shop going in. And we're like, this is good news. We've already settled our costs. Now the hip coffee shop can come in and rejuvenate the neighborhood. So yeah, retail space. Now, if you're doing retail space, I really recommend finding a commercial real estate agent to help you with that. A lot of times you can find them in your community, people who are followers of Jesus. And the reason you want to do that is that commercial real estate agents understand how to sign and build leases that protect you as a renter. You're taking on, if you sign a 3-year lease, you're on the hook for every dollar, whether you stay or not, whether it's habitable or not, whether you've built out the tenant improvements or not, you're on the hook for every dollar. And so you really want to make sure that you've signed an agreement. And a lot of times there's a lot of negotiation space in a commercial lease. So make sure to find a really good commercial realtor. I do real estate, just, you know, full disclosure. I have a small real estate practice that I do on the side, and I love helping churches figure these things out, both for free and also as my clients, because it's a really treacherous spot where you can make or break your church. Yeah. Based on the decisions you make about real estate. Now, the church we just talked about that you went to, a lot of the problems that they had were really related to the choices that they made about the type of real estate that they were in. Mm-hmm. They moved from that movie theater into a very expensive, like, office rental.
Yeah.
That then, like, really put a lot of pressure on them to grow and to kind of survive. You were there some of those years, right?
Yeah. So I started going to Pursuit when they were in that movie theater. I stopped going when I married my wife. We started going to the Vineyard church here, one of the Vineyard churches in Boise. And then as we kind of wanted to be more hip and young and cool. The Pursuit was one of those churches that hip, young, cool kids went to, or young adults went to. So we went back when they were in that space. And that was big. I mean, it was a big space. It was, I think when I think of like church real estate from a church plant to, you know, to growing, like that was like, oh man, like almost like they're, what are they doing so well that they allow, you know, allows them to be in the space. And I have, you know, you're obviously closer with some of the leadership there, but I think that talking to some of our friends who were in the Pursuit that time, it felt very much like we have to keep this growth model going. We have to keep people getting through the doors. Yeah. We have to keep building all these programs out to meet the needs, because the building kind of runs the church sometimes. And it's like to the point where it's like, you know, being able to rent that, you know, then there's a lot of challenges that can come in there. And I think, you know, there's probably a bunch of different ways to go about it. But I think, you know, that's something I've never felt like we were in this space where it was like, oh, the space that we are in is dictating how and what we do. And I think that's been a real blessing for us. And I really appreciated it because it's, you know, I think, again, it feels weird to like think I haven't been at a church that just is, that's the only thing it is the church that I go to in, mm-hmm. you know, in 10, 8 years. But I think like, I've also never felt like that we go to somebody else's church. Like I was going to kind of ask this question to you, because I'm sure you're probably getting there. We've met from our existence in another church's building, whether it's their gym or in their sanctuary now. Mm-hmm. But I've never felt like we're this church that meets in another church. It's always our space, because when we're there. From 9:30 to 10:30 in the morning, it's Redemption Hill. And then when we leave, a different congregation meets in their church. And so I think that seems like a challenge that that can be really really stressful. And like this feeling like if you get into, whether it's a bad lease or you buy a space that maybe you're not ready to move into, or it feels like that would be the worst way to go about making decisions about how your body meets and what you're doing, is like, how do we make sure that we're able to pay these bills? So,
yeah. Well, so that church that you were at, they, one of the stories that I've heard is that, so they bought the building eventually, a very large, like office building next to a YMCA in a great location. Mm-hmm. And they end up buying the building. And here's what happens when you take on a loan from a bank. The bank actually gets to determine your budget. Did you know that? Mm-hmm. So like, let's say you sign a commercial lease, and first of all, every one of your elders is going to have to sign on as a personal guarantor or of a mortgage. Like you're going to have to sign on as a guarantor, which is, that's going to show if you really trust in God and the church, signing on to a $15 million mortgage.
Yeah.
You have to sign on as a guarantor, and then you have to have policies in place about your budget that determine how much money you spend on ministry. And in their case, a bank can come to you and say, we don't like your growth trajectory. They're going to ask for audited books every year. They're going to look at it and say, you know what? We see that you're losing people. And so you lost 300 people. So what we want you to do is we want you to put this year $500,000 more into reserves so that we're protected and our investments protected in you. And so what ends up happening is you make decisions, you have less resources because you're putting more money into reserves, and that actually then precipitates a decline in the amount of money you're spending to reach people and to serve the community. And what happens is then you lose more people, and then they want more money in reserves. And it's this downward spiral of you can't invest in the actual mission of the church. The church itself exists to make sure that the building's paid for. That's a complex thing. And, you know, we're a little bit long. I think we need to have a second conversation, because there's like, we need to talk about horror stories around churches and real estate. and talk about kind of the second part of it, which is not just leasing, but when is it time to look for and create a permanent space for your church? Mm-hmm. I'm not against that. I think that there are times and spaces where you're called to have a long-term investment in a community, saying we're here for a generation and we're going to make this our home. So we'll talk about that next week. Mm-hmm. And Matt, have you learned our tagline yet, or do I need to do it this week?
Let's have you do it.
Okay. Now remember, our dear church planner friends, if you want to reach the people no one else is reaching, you've got to go where no one else is going and do what no one else is doing. We'll see you next week, friends. Take care.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. This episode was brought to you by Church Web Builder. If you've been meaning to scrap your terrible WordPress church website, or you just need to actually sit down and make your church plant's website, let this be a sign to you. With Church Web Builder's library of church-specific templates and integrations, and the included all-in-one marketing and communication platform, a beautiful new website is literally sitting there waiting for you to take it. Go to churchwebbuilder.io and use the code PLANTER at checkout. You'll get 50% off your first year. Yes, 50. 50% off your entire first year. Again, go to churchwebbuilder.io and use the code PLANTER. For more from the Church Planter Podcast, hit us up on Instagram and Facebook at Church Planter Podcast and on Twitter at CPlanterMag. We'd love to connect. See you next time.